Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to episode number 299 of the Eat PhD Team podcast with myself and Roz. Hi, Roz. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. So I am. Hi, are you?
I'm also good. Thank you. I'm good. I'm looking forward to doing this podcast because we've been talking about doing this one for a little while and it feels like a long time coming. So in today's pod, we want to touch on really disordered eating, eating disorders, scope of practice, because if you follow me for more than, 2 months, you'll know that I get really enraged by the, individuals, people who just decide what their scope of practice is, or in a more compassionate light, maybe people who don't necessarily understand what their scope of practice is when it comes to the fitness space, the wellness space. But on the flip side of that, and you know, you've got a lot of helpful insights on this, the distaste from the more dietetic space towards the fitness space for people working maybe more in the disordered eating realm. So there's like, we've long sat in the middle of, you know, in this disordered eating spectrum between dietetics before you thankfully started with us. You know, we were always sat between dietetics as a registered nutritionist and kind of really just like baseline PT nutrition knowledge. But luckily we've expanded on that since you've joined the team. So you obviously have the scope to work with people across the spectrum. What's your experience with it, I suppose, from a dietetic standpoint in that sense?
What do you mean?
As in, like, what do you see about scope of practice? What are your thoughts about scope of practice in various industries? This is not a critique of any specific industry, obviously.
So I think my journey and opinion in this is always evolving and ever changing. But I think maybe like a year, 2 years ago, I was quite surprised at how many coaches there were working with ED. Well, and I felt quite like enraged, is that the word? I felt quite like mad about it. But now that I think I'm more transitioned into like the wellness sphere and the fitness sphere, I can actually see that there is people working within their scope. There's still like the odd people not, but I think it's language. And what I've just noticed is there's a lot of maybe coaches talking about binge eating, not even coaches. There's those like therapists and stuff and somatic therapists I've seen like popping up as well. That's obviously like my feed. And I think I sometimes get annoyed, but I also understand there's so many people disordered eating that they also need somewhere to go. So they do. So I think I'm trying to become more compassionate to it. And it's not that people are purposely acting out of scope of practice. It's maybe a bit of ignorance. And this was actually highlighted to me recently because I have a client. So whenever I work with clients, sometimes they still work with a PT. Sometimes then they actually like work with me and then one of the other coaches for like their strength and training. I'm quite flexible. And this PT, I had like a Zoom call with him. He's also an online coach, but I was like, are you okay if I just do all the nutrition side of things and the PV change? Because she's got an active eating disorder. She had like anorexia. And he was like, yeah. And like once every 2 months we touch base and he was like, Roz, your knowledge and your experience, he's like, how can I do that? I would love to work with people with anorexia. And I was like, of course. I was like, well, you'd need to be either a registered therapist or a registered dietitian. And he was like, oh, that's not, learning's not for me. Like, I don't have capacity to go back to uni. And I was like, that's fair enough, because not everyone's got the, you know, it is like another either 2 year postgrad or like 4 year course. But I was like, well, then that's just the end of the road like that's the line for you. And he couldn't really seem to like understand that. But I was like, and I told him some of the examples of what this client tells me. He was like, oh yeah, I wouldn't be able to manage that. And I was like, well, that's your scope of practice. And I think he was just naive. He's quite young as well. And he's like, do you have any courses? And I was like, you try EIQ if you want to like learn more about disordered eating and overall like that holistic approach. But again, you still can't work with ED. And that was a learning experience for me of how sometimes I go guns blazing when I see a coach working with ED, but I realize sometimes it's just their ignorance
Yeah,
to
and
me.
I definitely used to be more that way inclined. There were always a couple of people that I would kind of initially call in and then started to call out again. I never named them where I knew what they were doing, and they knowingly were outside of their scope. But I think like it's interesting that you kind of brought up like the terms of like binge eating. So there were a couple of years when I never used the term binge eating because I really was really mindful of one, people assuming that I worked with eating disorders, because for reference, I think it's important to note like I have an undergraduate in sports biomedicine, a master's in sports nutrition, I'm a registered nutritionist with AAFN, I have a my PhD is in exercise physiology. I've taught nutrition at university for years. I wrote a program at university, two programs, and I don't work with people with eating disorders because it's outside of my scope of practice. And it's like, I understand people, there's like these courses now that you can do like as PTs that are like, and now you might have seen them, they're like short courses in like eating disorders and fitness or eating disorder things. And they don't qualify to work with eating disorder. And I don't think this is, I'm not putting blame on the people that do these courses. I suppose I'm putting blame on the courses. Like, why are you teaching these things? Is it out of personal interest? Because these people then go and do these qualifications. Like, oh yeah, I've got this course qualification from X university that's on eating disorders. And I'm like, but you, that, this doesn't, unfortunately, that doesn't qualify you to work with people with eating disorder. You could still do harm. Compared to you, and you can talk about like, what qualifies you to work with eating disorders specifically. But I think from a, even if you look at someone who's seeking support, it's a minefield of who you're supposed to get support from, right? Or who you want to get support from.
Yeah, 100%. Because I also had a referral recently, and she was like, I think it came from you. I don't know if you remember the email. It's like, I was told she wanted to see my qualifications because she was like, I was told to work with a nutritional therapist registered with BANT. But they're not actually, again, legally or qualified to work with eating disorders, but someone had told her this. And I actually passed that on. I mean, like, massive like group of eating disorder dietitians. I was like, I passed that in because I was like, we need to be doing more here. Because apparently at the minute nutritional therapists have got really good propaganda, like they're very like well known. And I don't know what it is about dietitians or like our groups, the BDA, we're just not doing enough to highlight that actually we're like the gold standard for eating disorders. And on that, we said about my qualifications, I began to hear what some dietitian colleagues would say, but I don't think just because you're a dietitian doesn't mean you can work with eating disorders. Like prior to me going into eating disorders, when I worked in the NHS, I didn't have the experience. We panicked. Like me and my colleagues panicked when someone with an ED came onto like the general ward because we'd be like, we don't know what to do, we don't know what to say, like we're not trained in this. At university, we didn't actually get much training. We got like awareness of what an eating disorder is and how it affects metabolics. But we got as much information on that as what we did on gastroenterology or like endocrinology. It wasn't like a specialist. And then I got majority of my training like actually like in the job in the NHS. I had competencies assigned to the job that I had to like show evidence that I could do, whether that was like practical assessments with clients or like reflections, or even I had to have like psychologists peer supervise me and give feedback. So it like, yeah, there's a lot more work. It's not just like an exam that you can get or like yeah, I think you can do a master's in eating disorders, but like if you've got a degree in biomed and a master's in eating disorders, it doesn't mean practically you can help someone with an ED. And I'm keen to hear your thoughts, but I've also been seeing like some other coaches and fitness professionals doing courses for coaches and fitness professionals on ED awareness. And on one hand, I'm like, okay, that's good because maybe that'll help with the whole scope of practice. But on the other hand, I'm like, why do they need ED awareness if they're never going to work with them?
Yeah, and we've obviously touched on this in private conversation of it's so important to have awareness. And something we teach on EIQ is the spectrum of just, optimal nutrition to eating disorder and that scope in between where, whenever anyone applies to work with us, we will, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, we will ask initially, like, do you feel like you might be experiencing eating disorder? But then we will also, what's the word I'm looking for? Not vet. The word is on the tip of my tongue. We will also figure out, through the right questions, I can't figure out the word. Do we feel you, if I think someone may be experiencing an eating disorder, they will always come to you and you will be able to identify as a qualified person. Yes. And until you started working with us, we never took on anyone with an eating disorder and always refer to a registered dietitian or to, the GP. And I think something we've come across, and I think what was amazing about you coming to work with us was that it helped bridge this gap where I felt like I didn't feel like people in the clinical field necessarily loved what ETPHD was about, because we've always worked on moving people away from the disordered eating of fitness and wellness back into the optimal rate health range. But because of some of our messaging, I've always been very clear in that we've done a great job, so I'd never feel like I'm doing anything quote unquote wrong. But I've always been aware of like, it doesn't, I don't advertise or market in the way that dietetics might want me to market, for example. But for the impact that we've had, I kind of stand by that. However, when you came on, it was really nice because it was like, okay, we can see we're bridging the gap between that kind of really clinical side of things, whilst also providing that and like the fitness side of things. But something that we sometimes see is sometimes people will avoid that clinical help. And sometimes people will apply to work with us at ETPHD, and I know that they're experiencing eating disorder, and I'll say, to work with you. And there's a reluctance, and I think it's a reluctance of working with a dietitian, a clinical dietitian, and you're amazing at bridging that gap. So, like, it's not black and white. But what often happens is that people who are experiencing eating disorder and fitness and wellness go around the houses with coaches who are putting them on meal plans. And whether they feel able to share that they're experiencing eating disorder or not, they may be not. It's not a coach's specific fault or person, no one's fault. But it delays people from getting the full support because there's just this reservation of going to a dietitian for support, or this idea that dietitians don't understand the fitness and wellness space. Or the fitness and wellness drive, aesthetic drive, fitness goals drive, performance drive. And so there's like a resistance. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with you was like, if people could just see, if people could work with you and understand that you understand that, I feel like they would get support a lot quicker rather than have this fear, of what happens if I work with a clinical dietitian. Is she going to make me stop going to the gym completely? Is she going to tell me that I'm never allowed to care about the way that I look, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and the reason I actually applied to work with you was the content you were putting out. I was like, this is what we need. Like, I agree, and I never want to criticize my colleagues. And I think maybe it's part of the code of ethics that we have. And we mainly all come from, when you're a dietitian, you have to do like a full year of placement in the NHS. So, and the NHS is a, again, I don't want to criticize it, but it's a system, isn't it? It's like this big professional clinical system. So I think we're like subconsciously indoctrinated to be like clinical. And I had this conversation with some colleagues recently. They were like, as dietitians, we should all like be promoting each other's Instagram posts and things like that. And I was like, actually, I disagree. I think we need to be like linking in with like fitness professionals and like co-sharing that, because that's going to have a better crossover of engagement, but it's also going to build up trust. Like, your followers hopefully will build up trust in me, my followers will build up trust in you. Whereas if you're already following a dietitian, you don't want to see another dietitian's content because it's probably going to be similar. And maybe you're already like okay with a dietitian. But I think how maybe I don't know, quote unquote different is I've also got the lived experience. Like, I used to play like hockey at a really high level, and hockey didn't contribute towards my disordered eating. It was like separate. But definitely, like, whenever I gave up hockey in that high level, then I got into the gym. And I never had to care about my eating habits or my weight when I played hockey because I was training and it was just very, like, intuitive. And then when that all came away and I started being like, oh, now I need to, like, actually train. And I wasn't, what was I training for? When I was training for hockey, it was for, like, performance. And then all of a sudden, I was training in front of a mirror. And then all of a sudden, I started, like, tracking. And that's when, like, for me, and it was that. Not the gym caused my disordered eating, but then it was like the whole like aesthetic goals, training just for that. So I think I've got that lived experience and I've worked with different PTs personally as well. So I've had that lived experience of being in the quote unquote fitness world. Like maybe I've never did like a show and I've also did triathlons, like half marathons, and like I'm always trying to find exercise that I enjoy. I think I've been in that journey that so many people we work with have been like, whether that's running for fat loss instead of running for performance, running to try and burn calories. And I've tried all like the stupid things like, I don't know, just having a protein shake for breakfast, or I can't even remember some of the stuff I did now, which I'm really glad that I think I've just erased that. But and I actually followed your content years ago. What like in probably when you also had like maybe like disordered habits, and I really I seen that in me and really didn't know at the time. So I think I just got the lived experience and I'm beginning to be vulnerable enough to talk about it, and that's what means I can be a more compassionate coach.
I think lived experience is so important, and it's not like you have to have been there to understand, but a lot of people we do speak to will say like, I would like someone who has that lived experience, and that's and everyone's allowed that personal preference and of who they seek support from, especially when you've been struggling with an eating disorder or disordered eating for a long time. And it's a really brave thing to do to finally like reach out and follow through with that support. One thing that I was wondering was what type what if someone was listening to this and they're like, well, how do I know if it's disordered eating or an eating disorder? Apart from obviously when you apply to work with us or chat to any of us, we will always help you, like support you, and I will usually always be Roz that supports you with that, unless you're kind of you know where you're at with it. But if someone's listening to this and they're like, I don't really know, like how do you distinguish between disordered eating and eating disorder? And then I suppose for coaches listening to this, how do they know what's in my scope here and what's when should I refer out? And we have a coach's referral process on our website for people that aren't unsure.
So suppose we do have clinical guidelines like the DSM-5 that's got very clear definitions of like, you know, how often someone's binge eating. For anorexia, it might be more like weight focus, and bulimia, it might be how often someone purges. But and we've also got the MEED guidelines. So if anyone like MEED, like APTs can look that up. But I feel like other ways to know is people often maybe won't talk about purging. So they won't talk about laxative abuse, vomiting, overexercising. So I think it's actually like, yes, we've got the clinical guidelines there, but also reading between the lines, like when you're on a discovery call with someone or their application form, I think it can become quite apparent. And it might take like one or two calls actually. Like sometimes even for me, it takes the third call or the third check-in for me to be like, oh, this is the extent of like what's going on. But I think whenever how you know if it's disordered eating or an eating disorder is it's impacting somebody mentally and emotionally that they cannot do things for themselves without this set of like habits and behaviors. So maybe it's like impacting their relationships, their work-life balance. And what I mean by that is maybe, you know, how often they train, their particular eating habits, how like they're tracking. And if you were to take away those habits, how would that make them feel? And if it was disordered eating, if you took away those habits for someone, okay, it'd be challenging, but they could probably get over it. Whereas if you took it away for someone with an ED, that could then cause other compensatory behaviors, which actually could lead to like low moods, suicidal ideation, anxiety. And that's where it's out of your scope of practice as a non-dietitian.
Yeah. And I think with disordered eating still, I'd still say for some people who are personal trainers, disordered eating is outside your scope of practice. And something you we cover this a lot on EIQ What is binge eating? What is overeating? What is binge eating disorder? And we don't go into anorexia so specifically, to be honest. And I think it's because what I think is really interesting here, this is not why I don't go into any IQ, but what I think is interesting here is that I think with something like bulimia or purging, if someone shares that, it should be a clear signal to you, right? That's a clear line. I think with something like anorexia, the crossover with something like bodybuilding is so huge, where if you, I was listening to your explanation of, if you remove those things, people would find it hard, but they'd be okay. I really question a large majority of people more in the bodybuilding or photo shoot prep space, where that crossover lie, like where that crossover is for each person with the with anorexia and that severe, like, I know anorexia is not about body weight, but like this, even not anywhere on that journey of that severe restriction. And I think that probably is a lot harder to identify in yourself. And it's also glorified sometimes in those spaces too, right? Of just like that's your dedication. And there's a stat that I remember citing in one of my posts once or something I wrote, and it's like the rate of prior anorexia diagnosis in male bodybuilders is 100 times higher than Gen Pop males. 100 times, because there's such a crossover in things like personality traits between people with anorexia and bodybuilders. That it's so intertwined. So I think it can be really difficult, and it can fall under the net, I suppose.
And also, just from working with some ex-bodybuilders, what they said to me in the past is, maybe we had that initial discovery call, and then they actually fed back to me. They're like, actually, I think once the comp ends, I'll be fine. But then they've came back months later, like, I was lying to myself. So I was. So I think it depends as well. I remember asking you, I was like, is there a season to shows? Because there was a point last year I was getting more referrals for bodybuilders. I was like, is that because they're all either going into prep or coming out of it? There was like an influx. And I was like, this is really interesting. And I think I said to you as well, so frustrated. All the research is on males as well. There's like hard, there's, and as well, a lot of research from purging almost to the fact that it was kind of normalized as well, like quite normal. This is quote unquote the extent that you have to go to achieve that. And I had a coach one time who wanted to refer someone to me, and I was getting a bit of detail. And she was like saying, like, she is purging. And I was like, that's the line. I was like, that's like, this isn't a question anymore. Like, I think you need to, like, doesn't ha like refer to me, refer to a dietitian, but ultimately you cannot be supporting that person when they're actively purging.
Yeah, and I think this is another thing. I've had a lot of people, when I used to be more in the bodybuilding space, where I did a lot more bodybuilding podcasts and brought attention to it a lot more, I would get a lot of, especially males, contacting me saying, I'm 8 weeks out, I'm 7 weeks out, and they were telling me either they were binge eating this often or they were purging. And I would always say, okay, well, like, again, my professional opinion, especially if it was ED, I would share that. And it was never, it was more like, can you support me whilst I go through this prep? Well, I've still got my coach and I'll still be doing all of these things, but what can I do? And I would always just say, like, you really, like, they're two different things. There is no way to fully support what you're experiencing whilst you're still going through this competition prep. And I think this kind of ties in nicely to, again, like, what's the problem? Like, what is the problem of someone who have to, maybe they're experiencing binge eating disorder, and they've gone to a coach who's done like a photo shoot prep or something like that. And for them, every time they go to one of these coaches and they follow their meal plans or their macro splits, they do their thing, they do their photo shoots or whatever it may be, they stop binge eating. It stops. And it's only after that that they experience these things again. What's the problem, I suppose? And obviously, this is kind of a leading question because I do know some of this, but what would you say in your experience is a problem with that sort of cycle?
I'm like laughing as Amelia asked the question, because I literally have like two clients at the minute when we were chatting about this. She was like, I didn't binge. She was like, I didn't binge for 10 months. And she was like, on reflection, during those 10 months, I was doing like X, Y, and Z. And for me, the problem is it's ultimately delaying recovery. So it's like placing like a plaster over like the behaviors, over like like especially with binge eating disorder, there's a purpose behind that. Like there's something like bigger going on, usually some sort of emotional or like mental health. And yes, like the 12-week fellowship prep, it's often these people get a very specific meal plan, like a set of rules, and they can follow it because it's for 12 weeks. And then, but in that time, you don't dive into what's going on for this person, like in terms of emotional regulation, in terms of like body image. They also probably lose weight and then they get like body image dissatisfaction. And then the comp or the prep, whatever the photo ends, and they're not back to square one, but they've just been on this big journey, but they didn't actually do any of the quote unquote work. And what you've done is, I think, like unethically, you've just delayed someone's recovery. So you have, because also an eating disorder comes under the scope of mental health. And I think that's also, we need to recognize that. So it's not just someone's physical health or physical appearance that you've helped. You've actually maybe caused a decline in mental health. And a lot of people I work with eating disorders often are also on an anxiety medication, antidepressants, and have had suicidal ideation. So there's like much bigger concepts and risks at play as well.
And don't you think as well it exacerbates this idea that eating disorders are a willpower thing? As in, yeah, like, when I have willpower and I follow these meal plans, I'm not binge eating. Therefore, it's a matter of willpower that I can't stop binge eating. And it just exacerbates that cycle. You know, I think in my career, I've probably said binge eating is not a matter of willpower about 999 times. Let's make that 1,000 now. And it's not, but it definitely does exacerbate that cycle. And then when you get into the fitness and wellness narrative of like, you know, leaner is better, and this kind of weight stigma that inherently is so prevalent in not just not the fitness industry, in our society, right? It just all just exacerbates. Like if you just want it enough, if you just try hard enough, if you just fast a little bit longer, so they eat a little bit later, all of these things, if you just do that, like then it'll be fine. You just keep foods out the house and it will be fine, and it's so normalized.
And these behaviors, like for some people it's like 5, 10, 15 years it's been going on for. And that's, you're not going to overcome that in a 12-week program or even like a 3-month like coaching or whatever. It does, like I've actually got quite a few people at the minute like I've been working with for at least a year, and you know, we're not going to be finishing up anytime soon. And that's not because they're not progressing, but it's because we're just like scratching the surface. So we are like, maybe we've actually overcame binging, but now we're going into like other concepts like hunger and fullness and like exploring body image. But the past year has just been solely focused on overcoming the binges.
And I think with that, you know, people are thinking that's the support that I need. There's probably a bit of fear around, well, of course I'd rather do a 3 month or a two month transformation challenge than go in and do this work that I don't really know what it is for a year and then feel like I've still got work to do. Like, what do you say to people in that situation? Because you will come across those people, I guess, a lot with people that you start working with.
Yeah, that's when I start to talk about, you know, what other aspirations do you have away from appearance, weight, and things like that. And because so many people, and I feel so confident to say this, like so many people I'm working with now, like they're 6 months to a year in, they're like dating again, they're like socializing, they're like not necessarily changing job, but they're like they've got the confidence to like try out this new job, to go like solo traveling. And it's this abundance to life. So it's like, yes, you can do the 3 months and have that aesthetic goal, but what about like life? And I suppose still for some people they're like, Roz, you're just not on my wavelength. I don't want to think about that. But it's like, I suppose as well, not to be like this bit, maybe a bit more fierce compassion. Also, you can either work with me now and in a year's time we'll get you to a completely different place, or do the 12 weeks and you'll just be back to square one after a month of the 12-week transformation program. And maybe that sounds a bit harsh because that doesn't happen to everyone. Like some people can miraculously do a 12-week photo shoot and their mental health not be impacted. But I've just worked with too many people that it's been the other way around.
Yeah, and I think that ties into ETBHD as a whole. Like, we've had thousands of people over the years work with us who have applied and then haven't started working with us, and then or have, you know, worked with us and then gone away to do a show or a challenge and then come back to us and said, oh, you know, you were a bit reluctant for me to diet right now, and I so I went away and dieted with someone else, and now I've regained this weight. And you know, we, I think the point is like, especially, you know, we have the ETPHG method, and within your practice, like you incorporate the ETPHG method into your practice. And within that, like we have an understanding of, again, like your want for fat loss. And we also have an understanding of your drive for health. And one of my most hated posts and most engaged with posts that I've ever done, I've done it a few times, is like, if you've recovered from disordered eating and you're in a larger body, it's okay to pursue healthful fat loss. And the backlash that I get from that is wild. And fat loss is not for everyone, but the idea for many people that come to us and work with us is that, yeah, I can overcome my disordered eating and I'm in a larger body and I want to lose fat. And the only way to do that is to overcome my disordered eating first. And that's okay. Like, we will encourage you to find values and things outside of your fat loss that make this disordered eating journey worth it. But we also understand that, like, if that's your end goal for now when you start, and that's your reason for now when you start, that's okay.
Like, I'd say 8 out of 10 people I work with, their goal. So we ask them like two goals, like one and two, and their first goal is fat loss, and then their second goal is heal relationship with food, or it might be like heal relationship with body. And I always make this clear on like a call with people. I'm like, I'm not anti-diet, like I'm not anti-diet, but ethically, I'm not going to pursue fat loss whenever you're binging so many times a week or restricting or being sick, whatever it is. But I have also had successful clients that were became binging and now we're pursuing fat loss, and they're able to do that without it triggering old habits because we've did all that work on their values and boundaries and emotional regulation. And of course it's hard. There's like some weeks they've got this push-pull between overcoming binging and overcoming fat loss, but I think that's part of the journey, so it is. And but I'm not anti-diet, and I think at one point 3 or 4 years ago, I nearly fell down that hole. But I think then I start to work with so many people in larger bodies that I can see that for some people, like fat loss is a very, it's an okay goal for them to have and to want.
Yeah, and it's the same with ETPHD. Like, we know what sustains fat loss. We know how people can maintain their fat loss. And the reason that you, one of the reasons, if you're binge eating and you've done these types of diet plans before and you regain the weight, it's because you haven't tackled the binge eating yet. It's not because you can never maintain weight. And, you know, we want you to not have to do that again. Is there anything else you want to add in before we finish up?
No, I think that's there'll probably be stuff after,
I
but
will. We'll probably do another one.
I feel like as well, hopefully, you know, I like check out my Instagram and you'll see that I'm a fun dietitian. I feel like you know, like Mean Girls, like I'm a cool mom. So that's
Correct. Okay. What were you going to say to something there?
That's the type of cringe you'd be working with. So I, you know, that gives you an insight.
I don't think there's anyone, no offense to the ETHC team, that is not cringe, I don't think. Okay, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for listening. Bye.
You, bye.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.